Ketchum Crooks is the founder, CEO, and psychotherapist with West Coast Anxiety Clinic. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Excellent. I love it. Well, excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Oh, man. A little bit about my personal life, a little bit about my work. So I'm an anxiety specialist. I work primarily with, well, all of my clients vibrate at a higher frequency than people who aren't suffering with clinical anxiety. And so I, too, vibrated a little bit of a higher frequency, both personally and professionally. So I run an anxiety clinic. We specialize in anxiety and OCD. And in my personal life, I try to apply the things that I teach a lot of my clients to do, which leads me to do insane things like open a group practice, even though I'm fairly sure that it's going to be a colossal failure and everyone's going to laugh at me. And to do things like take on parenting, where also failure is around every corner. And I'm trying to teach them how to get to therapy as the meter of success. So, I'm also a licensed clinical social worker and a parent. So how many more things can I share in a really fast and inappropriately cadenced manner?
We're off to a great start. Tell me more about this vibration that people are vibrating at. Can you gauge somebody's vibration just from spending 3 minutes with them? And if so, how is mine?
You have like a really nice vibrational pattern because you've got an easiness to you that I think, I wouldn't gauge you as clinically anxious, but you know, give me 20 more minutes and we'll see how it unfolds. I'll pay attention to some of the things that you say.
Yeah,
you go.
There's still a lot of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's part of the vibrating a little bit faster, right? Like the pace of the speech and the some of the tone, the pressure that can be there, the things that people say in sort of very quiet and like subtle way.
So are we suffering, we being just people in the United States or maybe all around the world? My guess would be that we're a lot more anxious than we used to be. And if that's true, why is that?
Yeah, I think we are a lot more anxious than we used to be. We are certainly more stimulated than we used to be, right? It used to be that we get a newspaper, you read the newspaper comes to an end. It used to be that we would go to school and we would learn about who is popular and what is popular through regular exposure to Elisa, because she was the popular girl when I was growing up, right? She smelled like pear glass. She wore overalls. I, from that, deducted that Victoria's Secrets is where I must commandeer my sense from. And I would never be good enough to be in overalls because they would never fit me like they fit her, right? And so now we get that information really quickly, right? And you couple that in with this really persistent message that says that you must do X in order to be successful. What's the saying? Beyonce only has 24 hours in a day. I think that's the saying, right? So it's like, clearly I must strive to be Beyonce, right? And achieve all that she can achieve in 24 hours, even though like I am just like never going to be Beyonce, right? So there's this sort of like set expectation that you should achieve, but you likely never will. And so right from the outset, it's go, go, go. It's kind of that feeling. You're out in Phoenix, right? Like you guys have traffic. You get stuck in traffic.
Sure.
That feeling that you get inside of you that you got to get there, but you're just sitting. Mm-hmm. You can't get there any faster. Like there is actually not a place you can ever get because you're always here. Right. And so there is this messaging that like, I've just got to get there. I've just got to do the thing. I've just got to. And suddenly that vibration starts.
Stimulation and expectation Is there a genetic thing to it? Is there a hormonal thing to it? Is it? That's the end of my question, even though
Yeah, no.
I was pretending like I was going to ask something else.
I like it. I like it. I try and do a practice where I listen to the end of the sentence so that I don't step on it. But then
normally it serves you probably.
It does. And then there are often times where we sit in silence for quite a long time because I work on my sit in silence skill as well. So that could be uncomfy, not great for podcasts, but yeah. So there's a lot of factors into why we are anxious, right? There's just evolution, right? Like so you and I are out in the field and we look out into the distance and there's a blackberry bush and there's a bear, but is it a blackberry bush or is it a bear? Right. And so if we are unsure, we look out into the distance. And if I say, oh, that's a blackberry bush, I'm going out to get it. But you say that's a bear, I'm going back to the hut. 10 out of 10 times you're going to live, right? You have been selected for that ability to look out, to see uncertainty and to say, oh, that's dangerous. I'm going back, right? I go out there thinking it's a blackberry bush, but it's a bear. I'm dead, right? I don't get selected for that. We don't get selected. So our parents, 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 parents looked out into the great uncertain future and thought about bears going back to the hut. And then they hightailed it back to the hut. So there is this evolutionary component where we have been selected for our capacity to forecast a threat that might come down the pipeline, right? So there's that. There's some genetics to it. There's also some learning to it, right? Like, how many of us out there learned about worrying from our worrywart mothers or our worrywart grandmothers or even our dads worrying about this, right? And so there's this learned component as well.
So I guess I should have started with what is anxiety?
Yeah, great question. So anxiety, I think of anxiety as... So the differentiating factor is between anxiety and fear, right? Fear is you're swimming in the ocean being attacked by a shark. You are afraid. It is happening in that moment. That threat is happening. Everything in you gets activated and you fight or flight, right? Or appease. In this case, you're going to want to punch the shark in the nose, right? Anxiety is standing on the beach, looking out at the water, and wondering if there are sharks under there. Is there a potential threat out there that I need to plan for, adjust for, prevent, right? It's this sort of anticipatory fear of something that we don't actually know is coming down the pipeline, or something that we know. You got performance, you're like, oh God, is it going to be terrible? Am I going to be terrible? That's anxiety. But you're on the stage looking out at the people, it's performance time, that's fear.
So we were joking about Goldilocks and just right before we hit record. But is that kind of what we're looking for? Because I don't want to be blindly running towards the bush/bear, and I don't want to be too terrified to go in the water.
Yeah, I think that's also a slippery goal, right? Because there's a type of OCD that wants that just right. Like, how do I know when I'm there? Well, it just feels right. And then that's when I stop doing the compulsion, right? So Goldilocks has a little bit of that in there, right? Where you're just going for the just right kind of thing. What we want is functional, right? Like, how much of your planning is functional? How much do you actually need to do? When have you planned sufficiently for, I don't know, 70% of the catastrophes that could occur on this performance? And when is it time to put the planning down, right?
Goal is functionality. Is it at all irritating that I'm trying to boil things down, boil like your entire life's work down to Goldilocks?
I kind of love it, actually. And unfortunately, it's not my entire life's work, right? Like, I before I was an anxiety specialist, I was actually a porn star and I was on reality rehab shows. And before that, I was a barista and a pot dealer. And you know, I might be something after a therapist, right? And I've written books. And so there's I love the idea of being able to whittle anything down, because I sort of like, you know, like fall into that sort of like reductionist thinking. And wouldn't it be so nice if it were all that easy? But yeah, so I appreciate that that's where mind went, because my mind, I call her Brenda. She does it too. She's like, fair, oh yeah, enough. She's looking for Goldilocks all the time. Just right.
And I really think that I am doing that also. I have a tendency to, I do not think that I'm an anxious person. In fact, I think that I require a level of healthy anxiety to get up and do the things that need to be done every day. And that's really, really a broad statement, but what are your thoughts on that?
Agreed. Word. I think I might even let go of the idea of healthy and just sort of have it be functional, right? Like there's a functional amount of anxiety that you experience on a daily basis that helps you move through this very complicated world, right? Like, I don't want to go for a walk with someone who isn't just a little bit anxious, right? Because they're going to be jumping into the street. They're going to be doing things that put our life in jeopardy, right? I want somebody who has the capacity to think more than one day ahead, more than 1 minute ahead, so that we can do some thoughtful planning around our life. I don't necessarily want to be someone who gets so rigidly locked into planning for there and then, for a time that is not now, that I totally miss the things that are happening right now. Right. And so you wouldn't brush your teeth if you weren't just a little bit anxious. There's a functional amount, like we're trying not to get cavities here, folks. Right. So like, let's brush our teeth. That is a very functional amount of anxiety. Brushing your teeth from morning to evening because you don't want any sort of germs that is a dysfunctional amount. That is not helping you. And it's not necessarily that the anxiety is dysfunctional. It's that how you're responding to it is dysfunctional.
My response is, okay, so how do I know if I am overly anxious, if my anxiety is not functional, but it feels like it's functional because I've had it my whole life. It's mine.
It is yours. And it is also mine, right? Because it is the same emotional experience that we all have, which is why the symptoms of it are similar, right? You get that rapid heart rate, you get a little bit of tunnel vision, a little bit sweaty. The sweat is so helpful because if you have to fight a wild animal, it's better if you're slippery so you can get away from it, right? So it's the anxiety is ours, right? Like as a species, it is ours. We do get to have a little bit of ownership over it because our amazing brains are the facilitators and creators of it, right? It all comes up when we can forecast a threat. So when is it clinical? When is it an amount that isn't helpful for you? Well, does your life look like you want it to, right? Like, are you engaged and embroiled with this epic battle with this emotion state that's inside you so much so that you're missing the life that is in front of you, right? I think that's a good measure. Like, how small has your life gotten because you're fighting against this feeling that's inside of you? Because it's not the feeling that's inside of you that's the problem. It's, again, the way that you're responding to it. That's the behavior, right? And that's what we look to change in therapy, is how do you respond to this totally normal, beautiful, helpful, evolutionary, important thing that's happening inside of you?
That is really helpful. How small is your life? When you said that, I took it all the way down to worst case scenario from my perspective, that I would be so anxious to go outside, but then I'm stuck on my phone all day just staring at that. And that's probably not a healthy thing. And probably really exacerbates a lot of my anxiety.
Yeah, totally. 100%. Right. So, and that's, I actually started seeing that with a lot of my clients. So client shows up, they feel anxious about a particular situation. And so then they jump into their phone, and our phones end up being this safety behavior, right? It's the thing that brain says, okay, well, if I can't tolerate this anxiety, I know I can dip out by going in my phone. Step into an elevator, don't know what to do, don't know where to look, don't know whether I should just make small talk or stare at the wall like a crazy person, right? Like who does that, right? Like, I'll just look at my phone. Walking through the hallway at like trying to get to my class, unsure if I want to say something to anybody. Oh my God, he's so cute. They're so cute. What do? Just look at my phone, right? Sitting on the bus, don't know what to do, just look at my phone, right? And so there's this like continued use, like the anxiety comes up. Are there threats out there? Is socializing a threat? Is connection a threat? Is being present with some other human in the elevator a threat? I don't know. Look at my phone. I started seeing this with all my clients. And then one by one, we started really trying to move away from using a smartphone as a tool for managing anxiety, right? Because what it was actually doing is getting in the way of you learning something about yourself. Can you talk to the person that you think is super cute? Can you tolerate? Can you even enjoy the feeling of being anxious, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I'm a roller coaster girl. I love roller coasters, right? And that anticipation, standing in line, that, oh my God, here we go, here we go. Physiologically, it's exactly the same as the stuff that leads up to a panic attack. Like, it is no different. What's different is the story that we tell ourselves. So I started seeing this with a lot of clients. And then I started thinking, oh, this is this phone thing. This is an avoidance. This is an avoidance thing, right? These phones. But then I saw myself do it. I was at, it was a Super Bowl party at our house. And at the time, my daughter, my older daughter, Elsie, she was just about to turn one. And she was at the delightful stage where she just sort of like shuffles along all the furniture, right? Just like just learning to walk, but hadn't taken the big risk of the first step. And I had one of those errant thoughts that we all have, right? Like thought comes up, whatever, you pay attention to it, you don't pay attention to it. I followed it. It was about Snooki and Jersey Shore, naturally, as one thinks about when one is sitting in a room filled with people that are not talking about the Jersey Shore. So I followed this thought, what is she doing? I must know. And that, you know, if you give a moose Snooki, you're probably going to ask for the situation. And then you're going to want to know if Ronnie's in jail, right? Because obviously that's the next stop. And so pretty soon, time had passed. I didn't know how much time had passed, right? And then everybody started clapping. And I looked up from my phone and I realized that Elsie had taken her first step. And it was this moment that I missed. And I wasn't locked into my phone because I was actively avoiding stuff. I just went on autopilot, right? Like I just, the thought was there. I was like, ooh, and then in I went, and then the black hole happened and time passed, which sort of like stepped me back from this idea that like phones are just about avoiding anxiety. Maybe we're just on autopilot too.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So because you do what you do, that suggests to me that anxiety is an acute condition and not chronic, but I could be wrong.
I mean, as long as you have a prefrontal cortex, anxiety will be a chronic condition. Mm. I am not allowed to lobotomize anybody as per my malpractice insurance. I mean, I get it, right? But whatever. Yeah. So you're not getting rid of the fact that you're an anxious human, but what you can do is learn to wrap your arms around yourself in moments of suffering and to acknowledge that this is part of the human condition, this very specific flavor of suffering. This is something we all do. And we don't have to fight against it. It's actually something that makes us human.
It's a feature, not a bug.
It's a feature, not a bug. That's right. Oh, we don't need to solve for this.
I love it. Well, Jenny, to be continued. I think we have to have you back on. I think that there's a million things we could talk about. But thank you so much for coming on today. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. You can learn more about me by visiting me in my group practice, West Coast Anxiety. You can hit me up on Instagram. It's Becoming Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E. And I have a new book out. It's called Look Up. It's a 30-day path to digital minimalism and real-life maximalism. And if you, too, are missing precious moments of your life, it's a great way to get unstuck. You can get it on Amazon right now.
Excellent. If you enjoyed this much as I did, show Jenny your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to westcoastanxiety.com and check out Jenny's practice and everything that she is working on. You can find her on Instagram at Becoming Jenny, and then pick up your copy of Jenny's newest book, Look Up. And I will certainly link all those in the notes of the show. Jenny, can I ask you one more question?
Please do.
Do you have a pair of overalls?
I finally committed and got a pair of overalls. They're shorts. I'm so uncomfortable wearing them, but I do it anyway.
Let's go.
Anyway.
So glad to hear that. Thank you again, Jenny. And until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.